is Roland from the Flag Center. Are you thinking about a new flagpole for Memorial Day or 4th of July? Well, now is a good time. Currently, our high-quality Titan telescoping poles are on sale at prices too low to advertise. These beautiful silver or dark bronze poles are backed by a lifetime warranty and wind rated at 95 miles per hour. The Flag Center, 2124 Hilltop Drive, since 1982.
Here at KCNR Radio, we are fortunate to have two well-informed citizens.
Hi, I'm Nick Gardner.
And I'm Doug Janke, and we'll give you the inside scoop of news affecting you.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest, Sundays, here, 8 o'clock.
KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and on your AM dial, 1460.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
Randy Weingarten, you know, the head of the second biggest teachers union, saying that she wanted schools to open when she got to rewrite CDC policy to keep schools closed, and this happened in winter of 2021. She tried to keep schools closed even longer. The rewrite, it kills me, and I hope that people see through it.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Carol Markowitz, columnist for the New York Post, frequent writer for Fox News Opinion, and also co-author of the best-selling book, Stolen Youth, How Radicals Are Erasing Innocence and Indoctrinating a Generation. Carol is Hillsdale College's Pulliam Fellow for the spring 2024 term. She joins us in studio today to talk about her recent trip to Israel and what's changed in the year since the release of Stolen Youth. Carol, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
We have much to discuss with you today. But before arriving here on Hillsdale's campus, you were a little bit farther away across the globe in Israel, where you spent around a week in Israel. I want to talk about a number of different angles here. I am curious, though, about expectations versus reality. Mm-hmm. What did you think you would see and experience when you made this trip compared to what actually occurred?
I think my impression was a little bit frozen in time. But also, I thought I would see a country really shattered. I have to say, I've been not great since October 7th. I'm Jewish, and I feel like I owe a lot to Israel. I'm American first, I'm America first, but the truth is that I got to leave the Soviet Union because Israel gave us the blanket. Wherever you don't get into, if you don't, everybody was applying to America or Australia, Canada, other places. But the promise was, if you don't get in, Israel will take all of these people. And so I owe a lot to Israel. I owe them my freedom, I feel like. And so I think that I thought that they would be shattered after October 7th, like I've generally been. And they are. They're very traumatized. There's a lot of hope lost. A lot of them are ultimately peaceniks. And the truth is that so many peaceniks died that day. The mayor of several kibbutzim in the south that were attacked, he died that day. He was a big peace activist. I mean, they killed people who wanted to live together. Mm-hmm. And so what you have in Israel right now is definitely a reaction to that, where I think that they're going to be not interested in pursuing a two-state solution or anything like that for a long time. But it's still such a buzzing, alive country, so happy to exist and just doing so well. Tel Aviv, we went to these incredible restaurants, like straight out of New York City restaurants. The only sad thing was Jerusalem was really empty, the old city. It was really empty. My sister-in-law and I went, and we walked right up to Jesus' tomb, and there was no line. There was a few people, and it was moving to watch them pray. But I had been there before, and there's been like these long lines and these crowds, and everybody's jostling and trying to get there. And here we just strolled right up, and it was great because we didn't have to wait in a line, sure. But it was also just sad that people were staying away because it was scary. And it was the first day of Ramadan, and everybody was bracing for something to happen. So pluses and minuses. The whole country is a country of contradictions, as everybody calls it. It's old and new, and it's just got a lot going on. I highly recommend visiting to anybody who hasn't. I know it seems like a weird time, but they could really use the support. They could really use tourist dollars, and you can walk right up to Jesus's tomb. No line.
You were there for a week, and you talked to, I know, a lot of Israelis on the ground, some of who were directly affected, you know, families affected by what happened months ago. How much did it appear they were paying attention to the shift in the official line from the Biden White House? And how much did they care about the official shift in the language coming out of the Biden White House?
Everybody is very aware of the United States shifting on anything. They see, you know, the United States as their greatest ally, which I hope that we are. And they are always on the lookout for a change in language or a shift in perspective. They understand our electoral system. They know what gets votes. They understand all of it. They're very savvy about it. I would say I spoke to a lot of like just general civilian Israelis who know a lot about our system and understand things like, oh, Biden's trying to get the vote in, you know, some places in Michigan. They get it in a way that I just completely do not get their electoral system. Does not compute. So they are nervous. They loved Biden's speech right after October 7th, which I would say is one of the best Biden speeches of his whole presidency. They're hopeful that Americans support them and that that will filter into the leadership. They're definitely concerned always about America pulling back. But they're, you know, the thing that I heard again and again, and I wrote a piece about the trip for Fox News, and I led with somebody telling us the story, a story that happened during the 2006 war with Lebanon. And he said, that war ended the way all of our wars end. Our greatest ally says enough. So there's also the concern that as much as America is their ally, we stop them from doing what needs to be done and that wars continue because of that.
What needs to be done is an interesting phrase. People who say they are pro-Palestinian calling for an immediate ceasefire.
Yeah.
There already was a ceasefire at the time.
There's ceasefire offers on the table right now.
And there's, and it's been rejected by Hamas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Being pro-Palestinian, shouldn't that mean in some way, and people can define it, I guess, the way they want, but being pro-Israel, finishing this mission, routing Hamas, taking out the terrorist as quickly as possible.
Right. Fully agree with that. And I would say that nobody is more pro-Palestinian than Israelis. Absolutely nobody. Nobody cares more about the lives of Palestinians. Nobody feels for them more. They feel like they're their neighbors. They feel like they live alongside each other. They want peace so desperately. So on my trip to Jerusalem that I mentioned, my driver back to Tel Aviv, our taxi driver, was a Muslim Arab living in Israel. He was trying to get home for Ramadan. You know, they live side by side and they generally live in peace. And it's the people who don't want them to live in peace who are so anti-Palestinian. Mm-hmm. They could have had a good life. They could have had a Gaza that was flourishing and doing great. They get so much money from around the world and they spend it all on weapons and tunnels. Nothing for their people. No, you know, no bomb shelters. They knew that Israel was going to hit back. You can't have an attack like that and not expect to be hit back. Mm-hmm. And what they counted on was that the world would stop Israel, and Israel is just not stopping now. And they did nothing for their people. I mean, absolutely nothing. And nobody hates Palestinians, I always say, more than their supporters in the West. They don't understand that you are giving people hope that Israel won't exist and that will never, ever happen, ever. It's over. That idea is over.
Carol Markowitz with us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Israel is a united front by and large on these matters. Senator Schumer recently calling for the ouster, the overthrow of Benjamin Netanyahu. What changes? What would change if that occurred?
From a war perspective, absolutely nothing. It would be a victory for the American left, but that's about it. And anybody else who would take that position would wage the exact same kind of war. If anything, Netanyahu gets criticism in Israel for not being kind of hard enough for taking all of these, just, you know, the idea that all these aid trucks that come in every day and Israel gets criticized for not letting in aid, which is absurd, you know, hundreds of aid trucks every day. And the argument from some parts of Israeli society is we don't know what's in those aid trucks, aid trucks. They do monitor them, but they're, you know, they're being passed off to people who a lot of people in Israel don't consider to be friends of theirs, like UN officials. So there's a lot of arguments coming from the other side in Israel that I don't think Chuck Schumer understands. Benny Gantz, if that's the next prime minister, is not going to fight a different war in Gaza. He's not going to say, okay, that's enough.
Carol, hang on. We'll come right back and talk more about the book, Stolen Youth and What's Changed in the Year Since Its Release. Carol Markowitz with us. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
The property insurance crisis in California is starting to affect the business insurance property also. 200 to 300% rate increases in business property rates or not writing business insurance at all are becoming the norm. At Siskiyou Insurance, we have over 100 years experience in writing business insurance in the North State. We can help. We live here and care about our community and want to make sure that you keep your business with a local agent that knows our town and supports it every day. And we'll get you the best deal we can. Call Curtis Byron at Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345. Siskiyou Insurance, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
The official meeting of the business-to-business meeting is called to order. Business-to-business, where we always say, make every transaction a win-win-win. Our guest today is Steve Clark from Minuteman Press of Reading.
Today I'd like to talk to you about business cards.
I just get mine from this.
Don't say it. Don't do it. If you're thinking of ordering your business cards online, don't do it. Keep your business local.
But they're cheaper online.
No. Business cards from Minuteman Press of Reading start at just $35, and custom design services start at $29, and you keep your money local.
Hey, that's a win.
Let us at Minuteman Press of Reading take care of your business cards. Rapid turnaround time and price right. We also do full service direct mail and promotional products at Minuteman Press of Reading.
Call 221-0400. That's 221-0400.
For Minuteman Press of Reading, where we design, print, and promote you.
221-0400. That's 221-0400.
Minuteman Press of Reading. Call today.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media. Find our links on our website at havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
Hello there, this is Kevin Cry. Every other Sunday, I will be on KCNR, your talk radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. I will be discussing the issues that matter to you most. You'll be able to call in directly, ask questions, and have a dialogue, open and free, every other Sunday, right here on KCNR, your talk radio.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We're talking with Carol Markowitz, columnist for the New York Post, also author of the best-selling book, Stolen Youth, How Radicals Are Erasing Innocence and Indoctrinating a Generation. You can find her on X, formerly Twitter, at Carol, K-A-R-O-L. Carol, Stolen Youth, great book, bestseller, now about a year old, and so much changes in 12 months. Is there anything that you've seen over the past year that you think gives you cause for more optimism than perhaps you had in March of 2023?
Absolutely. I think that the last year has been a pushback by parents, by sane people in society who saw things exposed to them. I'd like to say that Stolen Youth exposed it to them. Maybe it did. Maybe it was other stories, etc. But for example, you know, when we wrote the book, California was pushing a math curriculum that declared math racist and had this whole, you know, just nonsense in their math curriculum. That curriculum was pushed back. Also in California, they had stopped algebra from being taught to eighth graders because that was in the name of equity. They couldn't teach algebra to eighth graders. They recently, in the recent election in San Francisco, that has been reinstated. I mean, these are just small pockets of sane advancement. We do feel the pendulum swinging for sure. There's a lot of winds happening in different places. And I hope that those winds continue because we're just really at the start of beating back an ideological capture that went on for decades while the rest of us kind of didn't pay attention to it.
Dennis Prager has a question that he asks parents with adult children. And he says, what's your batting average? And what he means by that is, how many of your children are still faithful,
right?
Faithful to your church, faithful to your beliefs.
Yeah.
How many are still in the mold you wish to raise them? And you have said that sometimes it's parents in these red cities, red towns, red states that are most surprised that their children don't end up quite the way they had hoped. Why are they so surprised by that?
Yeah, I love Dennis, by the way. That's such a great line. It's funny, or not so funny, but I met so many people on book tour that had fallen out with their adult kids, and it was really sad and devastating to me. And I kept asking them, you know, did you talk about your values in the home? And it was the ones particularly in red areas who did not. The people who are coming to my book tour talk who live in places like New York or, you know, in super blue areas, they know they're in a fight. So at home, they talk to their kids. They verbalize their values. They make sure that their kids know. In red states or in red areas that I visited, they felt very secure that their local school, their local public school would push their values, the local private school. They felt that their neighbors would be on the same side. They just assumed that everybody was the same ideologically or with the same values. And what they found was maybe that was true, but the kids went to college and they went to college completely unprepared to defend those values, to say the words, to have the arguments. And so what they encountered was kids who were raised to be leftist activists who, you know, outran them in the arguments, who made them feel that where they came from was some backwater and their parents were racist and they had to have the arguments with the parents. You know, there was the AOC said, you can't go back to brunch. You have to keep having the fights. And so they went home and they had the fights with their parents and the parents were shocked. I heard a lot of people say that my kids came back zombies. That was the line. And they were really surprised that had happened. They thought that they had given them the upbringing that would prevent that. But again, they had never taught them the words. They had never said the words that kids need to hear. They never explained the arguments that they would encounter. They just assumed that they had done enough. And I don't think that they had.
Carol Markowitz with us for another minute or two. You can find her at the New York Post and also Fox News Opinion. The Carol Markowitz Show, her podcast available too. Just in the past couple of days, we see this op-ed, or really a story, I guess, from the New York Times looking back on the COVID closures. And as so many of us said at the time, I was looking for a tweet or something that I could, you know, prove myself right. I remember saying back in May
of 2020.
Right.
The biggest mistake we're going to make in this entire response is what we're doing to children and what we're doing specifically with the schools. And the New York Times report says kids who weren't in school are falling behind. Mm-hmm. It says that those in the poorest districts are performing the worst.
Yeah.
They are not recovering. And the shutdown didn't do anything, essentially anything, to slow the spread, which, of course, is 4 years too late for those kids.
This is, I mean, it just, I will never get over it. I will never get over what they did to the children. And, you know, my co-author, Bethany Mendel, I think it was May 2020, she tweeted, call me grandma killer, but, you know, you need kids to be able to go to the library and go to the zoo and go to, you know, do all the things that they need to do to be kids. She homeschools her six kids, so it wasn't so much about the schools being open for her. But it was clear that we were damaging these children. And I talk about this a lot, but I grew up poor in Brooklyn, and I was living in a very wealthy part of Brooklyn when the pandemic hit. I was living in a very leftist wealthy part of Brooklyn, Park Slope. So those people had spent the summer marching for equity, and then they suddenly had nothing to say about the poorest kids in the city having no school to go to. And meanwhile, for their own kids, they formed pods with private tutors. They sent their kids to private schools, which were, of course, open because private schools are super safe. And they didn't care at all. And that is ultimately what drove us out of New York. It was the not being able to unsee that our neighbors could not possibly care less about their fellow citizens. And they just, they towed the ideological line, which said schools have to stay closed because Donald Trump wants them open, and they didn't take care of the poorest in the city at all. I blame Randy Weingarten and people like her.
Well, and what is so frustrating for you and people like you and people who were aware of this as it was happening is the unions that drove the shutdown kept the schools closed for a long time. Even at one point, if you recall, the teachers wouldn't teach. So the students went back to school and the teachers hired other people to watch them in the classroom.
It was amazing.
But these, there will be no introspection.
Right.
There will be no consequences. And in fact, the unions will use this as leverage and say, look, now we're so far behind.
Yes.
We need more money.
That's
and we have more demands to help teach these children all they've lost.
Yeah, the rewrite is so galling. Randy Weingarten, you know, the head of the biggest teachers unions or second biggest teachers union, saying that she wanted schools to open when she got to rewrite CDC policy to keep schools closed. And this happened in winter of 2021, not spring of 2020, not even fall of 2020, winter 2021. She tried to keep schools closed even longer. So the rewrite is just, it kills me, and I hope that people see through it because this might not be our last pandemic, you know? COVID-32 might be right around the corner, and we need to have learned some really important lessons from this. But yeah, the people babysitting the kids in the school, really, that stuff like that, we, you know, was so anti-science.
Carol Markowitz, columnist with the New York Post, Fox News Opinion, co-author of the book Stolen Youth, How Radicals Are Erasing Innocence and Indoctrinating a Generation, and host of the Carol Markowitz Show podcast, which you can find wherever you find your audio, and our Pulliam Fellow here at Hillsdale College in the spring of 2024. Carol, also on Twitter, X, at Carol, yeah. K-A-R-O-L. Carol, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
Up next, Dr. Richard Samuelson, Associate Professor of Government at Hillsdale's Washington, D.C. campus, will tell us all about John Quincy Adams. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Reading, when was the last time you experienced Black Bear Diner? Entrepreneur Magazine recently recognized this hometown diner as a top growing national restaurant. Why? Because there's always plenty for your paws. With delicious homestyle options that deliver choice, value, variety, and a cozy way to make memories and celebrate occasions. Come on in and remind yourself what guests all over the country are discovering.
Black Bear Diner. Just when you thought B&T Satellite only does satellite dishes, it's a fact B&T Satellite makes TV easy. And now Doug's making Starlink Internet easy too. Starlink Internet is often the only way to get connected, especially if you game, stream, or work from home. Most often, there's several devices connected to your internet at one time, and that requires a great internet connection. B&T Satellite is your choice for Starlink Internet, and now Starlink installation and setup. Call B&T Satellite for your internet installation today, 241-3474. You'll always get the best Dish TV and DirecTV packages from B&T Satellite. But did you know Doug can set up your smart home devices, including cameras? Just call Doug at B&T Satellite, 241-3474. Don't call the 800 number. Call B&T Satellite today, 241-3474. For your home custom theater installation, for TV wall mounts, smart home devices, and everything satellite and internet, Doug makes satellite easy. Doug makes internet easy. Doug makes TV easy. Call B&T Satellite, 241-3474.
30 years ago, Simpson University arrived in Redding with a promise to serve the North State. Warmly welcomed by this far Northern California community, we forged lasting partnerships, serving our neighbors locally as well as globally. Building on our promise, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Our promise to be the gateway to world service begins in our backyard. Learn more about Redding's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Alan Gordon, Coach Master Auto Body. Big box store body shops to come to our area. They contract with as many insurance companies as possible. They provide discounts for these referrals. This allows the insurance company to dictate the parts and repair process to ensure the lowest cost of repairs as possible. This is not in your best interest for your expensive investments. At Coach Master, we work for our customer, not the insurance company. We have no obligation to cut parts prices or use inferior parts. We follow strict manufacturer repair guidelines. It's your choice and your choice alone where you choose to have your vehicle repaired. Coach Master was established in Redding in 1969 and doing quality repairs in Redding for over 55 years. Coach Master has proven to be your best choice for collision repair. And yes, it is your choice. Our friendly service and quality repairs will have you referring all your friends and family. And remember, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Remember Coachmaster on Eastside Road. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Join Tokens Radio Show every Sunday at 2 p.m. on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as host Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Tokens Radio Show with Linda and Christy this Sunday at 2 p.m. on KCNR. Big and exciting changes are underway.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to follow us on X, formerly Twitter. We're at Hillsdale Radio for show updates and guest information. We're joined by Dr. Richard Samuelson, Associate Professor of Government at Hillsdale College's Washington, D.C. campus. Dr. Samuelson, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Talking today, giving our listeners a biographical sketch on John Quincy Adams. As we begin, briefly tell us, who was John Quincy Adams and a little about his pre-politics background?
Well, John Quincy Adams almost doesn't have a pre-politics background. He was the son of John Adams and Abigail Adams, born in 1767. Outside Boston. I can't remember if he was there or in or outside Boston, but that's irrelevant. And one of his oldest memories are having his broken finger set by Dr. Joseph Warren, their friend who was killed at the Battle of Bunker Hill. He remembers seeing the smoke from the cannons as a young man. And by the time he was 10, he was accompanying his dad on his mission to Europe. And by the time he was 14, he was being sent on his own, or with their friend Francis Dana as a translator on the American mission to Russia during the American Revolutionary War. So he grew up with the American Revolution and with the new American regime. And so his whole life was framed in that world. He was raised in the, as a young man, very young boy, in the opposition to the king, and then independence happened, and he found himself in service before most of us would consider he was an adult.
John Quincy Adams really broke onto the political scene officially as a diplomat during the Madison administration. What were some of his major accomplishments during that stage of his career?
Well, it's interesting. As a diplomat, he actually, in some ways, he broke on the scene in the Washington administration. He wrote some defenses of Washington, and Washington saw them and liked them and sent him to Europe. And then when Washington stepped down, he wrote his father, John Adams, the next president, to get out of free, get jail free card, so to speak, saying you can keep him. And Washington said, doesn't matter, Mr. President, he'll soon be at the head of our diplomatic corps. And you read, I just taught our students a class about John Quincy Adams. You read through his discussion of what's going on in Europe. It is absolutely brilliant. And then, of course, he comes home at the end of his father's term as president, and at the very end of Jefferson's presidency, or actually the start of Madison's presidency, he is sent to Russia to open that alternative space, perhaps, in diplomacy to go around the Napoleonic Wars between France and Britain, perhaps open up a third front. And he is, again, his discussion of his analysis of what's going on in Europe and the players, what they're likely to do or not do, it's just it is absolutely brilliant. And interesting, all along, he's focusing on the needs of this new country, the United States. What is it? And throughout, interestingly, he's focusing on the Declaration of Independence as both as a legal document, that is, it's the basis of our independence, and also the ideas of it in outlining what it means to have the kind of country we have. And in Russia, he works to secure the independence. And then when the War of 1812 is going on, he is officially the lead of our diplomatic efforts in Ghent to negotiate the end of the American the War of 1812. And although in some ways Albert Gallatin was functionally really the head of that delegation. And then after that, he is sent to Great Britain to be our minister there, as his father was. And he starts negotiating what would become the Rush-Bajeau Treaty, which would wrapping up details from the end of the War of 1812. And we would demilitarize the Great Lakes, create the what was the world's longest unmilitarized boundary between two countries.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a model of peaceful, replacement of war with peace.
Following his service with Madison, he served with distinction under President James Monroe as Secretary of State. How did he help to shape the foreign policy of the Monroe administration?
Well, two things. Quincy Adams, his goal, he wanted to be president. And so he thought doing great work as diplomat, he was incredibly qualified, spoke several languages. Each morning he would get up and read a portion of the Bible, and one of them, I can't remember how many, 9, 10 languages he read and read it through every year. When they were in Ghent, he would get up first thing in the morning at 5 a.m., light the candle, and you know, start reading the Bible, and if it was German that year or French or Latin, I can't remember. And Henry Clay would be coming in from his late night card game, and they had to figure out how to work together. But he has made his tremendous experience, and he knows what's going on in Europe. Meanwhile, Spain is now a declining power. They're getting towards a post-colonial phase. The Americans want Florida. They have a claim out of Louisiana purchase because the treaty was written imperfectly for what's called West Florida. That is part of the Gulf Coast. And they want the rest of it. And Spain is essentially, he argues, forfeit of sovereignty. That is, they cannot keep Indians from crossing into Georgia and attacking Americans. So finally, Andrew Jackson actually violates direct order, crosses into Florida, and then he hangs two, a court-martial and hangs two British agents who he says, probably correctly, were actually supplying arms to the Indians. It's not entirely certain. And the argument is essentially, Calhoun and Monroe at first think we should repudiate Jackson. He violated order, and Quincy Adams says, no, this will help us negotiation for Florida. But he says, look, they are in default of sovereignty. It is a job of a sovereign to make sure people from your territory don't go into your neighboring nation and attack them with arms. And so he sustains Jackson, who would, of course, wreck his presidency. So there's something going on there in terms of the moral of the story. And he uses that claim and also negotiates the final borders Louisiana Purchase to create the Adams-Onis or the Transcontinental Treaty, which takes all the way from Florida clear to now what's now Oregon and Washington. He was actually pushing for part of Texas, and Monroe said, no, we don't need to go that far. And so it's an interesting quirk in the Missouri Compromise negotiations that part of the question was the North was more willing to go for it after Texas, that is what would be perhaps a couple of southern states, was no longer going to be part of the Union, or at least not right away. So that was this great victory, as a great diplomatic historian, Samuel Flambima, said, the greatest diplomatic history run by one person in American history, as he helped do that. And then what happens as these South American revolutions are going on, he helps talk James Monroe into what is known as the Monroe Doctrine. That is essentially saying there's a historical shift. Once European powers leave, they're not allowed back in. We're not going to bother European powers currently in South America or Russia coming down the Northwest, right? He's trying to stop them too. But you can't expand colonization. Once you stop being a European colony, you are now an independent nation, and we will help guarantee the independence of our fellow nations of the Americas.
Previously, we talked about Henry Clay, and we talked about Clay's role in the corrupt bargain, so-called corrupt bargain, and the election of John Quincy Adams. What about that event from the perspective of John Quincy Adams?
Well, from John Quincy Adams' perspective, he thought, well, the presidency, right, is not, you don't run for presidency, although you do have the first cartoons describing people literally running on the track for the presidency in 1824. One stands for office, and one is elected if the people deem that person worthy of office. So Quincy Adams had that view, and there's a legal process, and he came out victorious. Though it's not clear, presumably there was some discussion with Clay at some point in time, we don't have a record of it. But again, it seemed to John Quincy Adams that, you know, Clay is a very reasonable choice to be Secretary of State. He helps balance a ticket. Clay is a very important political leader. And that's now a sick of balancing administration, and he's going to have to, and Clay is very capable to be a good Secretary of State. But on the, so from his perspective, there wasn't any corruption involved. But the second thing is, though, he also in some ways overcompensates. In order to prove he's not being political, he goes so far as to not fire people under his own, in his own administration who are working for Andrew Jackson, unless they're guilty of outright corruption, unless he can prove it. And there's some suspicion in some cases, but no outright proof. So I think the Postmaster General which has the biggest patronage office in Washington, D.C., then he is actually appointing people friendly to Jackson in order to help facilitate Jackson's election in 28. But without hard proof of corruption, Quincy Adams will not fire him. And a president can't afford to be that anti-political. It's just not a functional way to be.
We'll pause right there. More of Dr. Richard Samuelson next as we continue our examination of John Quincy Adams. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. It's been a while since I've cut a new radio spot, but I feel I need to issue a warning about energy prices during this fall winter. Just as Obama said after he was elected, elections have consequences. This winter, our country will suffer some of the consequences of the last election. I'm not a politician, but I am a businessman, and many of the decisions of this current administration will drastically affect energy prices this winter and going forward. Already we are experiencing record high propane costs and prices. Remember, our motto at Shasta Gas Propane is, our customers are warm friends. We will treat you like friends this winter and do our best to help you through this high price winter. Give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
Hi, Bob the Drop here. The other day I had a close encounter with my friends from Mars. I visited them a few years back, and they discovered the great taste of Mount Shasta spring water. Well, I guess they ran out, so they came back to Earth to get some more. I reminded them it comes from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta, and it's bottled at the source. I guess they just didn't get the part about us delivering right to your door. Have your own close encounter by calling 1-800-922-6227 to get some of the best tasting water in the galaxy. Pure and simple, naturally, the best. Mount Shasta spring water.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
This is Elle. Join me and my good friends and co-hosts Ron Lim and Lenny Matthews for our show Ask Elle right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. we'll be exploring powerful topics on how to have a successful and satisfying relationship. See you here on Tuesday night at 6 p.m. brought to you by KNS Staffing Solutions.
530-605-4517.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. You'll find older episodes of this show and all sorts of great Hillsdale College audio. We've been talking with Dr. Richard Samuelson, Associate Professor of Government at Hillsdale's Washington, D.C. campus, on John Quincy Adams. Dr. Samuelson, how would you rate John Quincy Adams as president? What were some of his major accomplishments while in office, and perhaps what did he set out to do that he was not able to accomplish during his time?
He had tremendous ambitions, right? He and Henry Clay both agreed on what Clay called the American system, and very little of that got through. And they did get some canals. Adams got a great speech at the dedication of the Zeno Canal. And it's a very funny story. He was supposed to dig the ceremonial first bit of earth, but he hits very hard dirt or a root. I think he hits a root. And he keeps trying to get dirt out, and he can't. Takes off his jacket. He's huffing and puffing until finally he gets some dirt out of the ground for the ceremonial first dig. It's kind of a metaphor for his presidency. They get some of these internal improvement projects through. The bank doesn't get renewed, though. The bank hasn't is good till 1836, and Jackson would kill it, of course. And you get the tariff, the very high tariff of abominations is called the protective tariff. It's so high, people are angry at it, very angry at it, although some of it's reduced. They get some of that. And also, he and Henry Clay do have some successful work with the newly freed nations of South and Central America, although the effort to go to the Congress of these nations was heavily delayed by Southerners, and there's not much comes out of that. But you have to remember how great his ambition was. He wanted to be remembered as president at the level of George Washington, and that just did not happen. And the other thing is he went too far in his notion that once you're elected, you do the job, and then people can decide to like you or not, as opposed to the ongoing negotiation with the people. He literally said in his, I think it's either his first inaugural address or his only inaugural address or his first annual message, we should not be palsied by the will of our constituents. No, you need to pay a good bit of attention to what the people are actually thinking to be a democratic statesman. And Quincy Adams didn't quite digest that element of the story until after his presidency, just how important that was.
Speaking of after his presidency, as we talk about John Quincy Adams with Dr. Richard Samuelson, what did he do after his reelection defeat to Andrew Jackson?
Well, immediately after he moped a good bit, just as his dad did after his defeat, he also wrote some very interesting stuff. He wrote a epic poetry about the conquest of Ireland, by the English in the medieval era. And he wrote a study of the parties in the United States and a study of the Russo-Turkish War. But the main thing he did after he settled in, he thought he might become president again. He was hoping to rejoin the House. His district sent the House. He thought he could use that as a springboard to the presidency, which never happened. Once he realized he wasn't going to be president, he really settled in and became one of our great congressmen. In some ways, he was born to that role. He became a master of parliamentary rules and used them to his advantage. And most famously, he used this to fight against slavery. He also helped make Lincoln possible. He repeatedly recurred to the Declaration of Independence as a touchstone, giving several July 4th addresses and also referring to its principles regularly. And the key fight here, as you get the anti-slavery movement ramping up, you get petitions, lots and lots of petitions to do something about slavery. If it's banning, regulating transportation of slaves, a lot has to do with the regulation of slavery in the District of Columbia, you know, banning the slave trade in the district, banning slavery in the district, some other things they might do against slavery. And slavery was such a hot button issue that there are a lot of people who said, we just can't discuss this. And the House passes what's known as the gag rule, which they officially say, we will not receive any petition regarding slavery. We'll just lay on the tables, forget it. And Quincy Adams says this is a violation of the right to petition. The right to petition entails the obligation of the House to receive and respond. And he actually also repeatedly uses parliamentary rules to his benefit. That is, the House, unlike the Senate, has to repass its rules every 2 years. So the first thing on the first day of business of a new House, he introduces petitions before the gag rule is introduced. He regularly uses the old debater's trick. Does this count? And then they're debating the petitions anyway. At one point, he's actually tried to censor him in the House. He goes on trial, and he runs circles around the people trying to censor him, slavery. And finally, in 1844, interestingly, the first House after the election of the new census of 1840, and you have more northern House members, right? Each House, you get new districts, and the North is going faster than the South. And then they finally repeal the gag rule, and he writes in his diary, blessed forever be the name of God. And the underlying story here is connecting the right to petition, that is the right to articulate your ideas for what public policy should be and to debate them, with the Declaration of Independence, the rights of all human beings to be free and not slaves. And, of course, that is becoming increasingly untenable to the South. And you get to the point where the South can't abide any criticism of slavery. And Quincy Adams uses that quite effectively. Remember, Jefferson, in his discussion of slavery in the state of Virginia, said one of the problems with slavery is anyone who's raised a master of slaves, if you're the child, you learn to be like your dad, you become a petty tyrant with a very thin skin. And Quincy Adams uses that to play the picador at the slavers, at the pro-slavery, the increasingly pro-slavery South, in order to teach the North that at some point in time you will no longer be able to compromise with the South. And in American pop culture, this side of Quincy Adams' career is perhaps most famous from the movie Amistad from about 30 years ago now, where he is brought in on the Supreme Court appeal of the slaves who literally exercise their rights under as articulated in the Declaration of Independence to declare themselves free from slavery, free themselves on a slave ship at sea in international waters, land in Connecticut, and then petition to maintain their freedom. And Quincy Adams is one of those who argue successfully for their freedom at the Supreme Court. So he used that office to help make anti-slavery fundamental to the understanding of the American regime, at least in the North.
What would you describe as John Quincy Adams' greatest legacy through his long career, and why should we perhaps be thinking about him during today's times?
Well, he has two legacies, right? One is as one of our greatest, perhaps our greatest diplomat, right? He had long experience, and he was very wise, very learned. He understood how diplomacy worked. He understood the players, and it's very hard to be a good diplomat. The other thing is that maybe it makes you a little bit outside. To be a good diplomat, truly to understand other people, you have to see your country as if from the outside, and maybe that's why he was less able as a president to kind of work inside the political system. Although it goes all the way into the House, he can. So one thing is his diplomacy helps make us a continental union. That is, to be united and free. There's a recent book by Niall Hendrickson called Peace Pact. That is, if we keep the union together, we can be free and therefore have a more free government, right? If we fall apart into two or more states or confederacies, we will have borders and therefore wars, and war would justify a bigger state and more intrusive state, as wars tend to do and have across European history. So one is as a diplomat, as a devotee of the Union, to keep the Union together in a dangerous world. The United States is independent, famously, as 1821, July 4th address, the middle of which he actually literally reads the Declaration of Independence. He said, "We go not abroad, assert some monsters to destroy." That does not mean, of course, I'm editorial, there are not monsters abroad. That's important to note. And as president, he says, well, even he was one of the people Washington was listening to writing his farewell address, as Bemis notes. But in his own presidency, he says, look, Washington's advice about staying away from Europe, that's, to a degree, that's advice of an age. As America's growing up, and now we have the post-colonial situation in Central South America, we do have permanent interests. So it's not simply isolationist versus engagement. Those terms aren't useful. It's how you engage, how you protect the independence of the United States. That's one. And two is his anti-slavery legacy in the House. That is, America's a nation founded on the principles articulated in the Declaration of Independence. And those have implications for the kind of political system we have. That is, the Constitution must be interpreted in light of the principles of 1776. They are, after all, the very principles that justified the people ratifying the Constitution. If we didn't have those principles in the Revolution, we would not have ratified the Constitution. We would not have needed to. We would not have recognized that's how you create a new regime. And so making the principles that all men are created equal, endowed by the Creator, restoring inalienable rights, and putting them at the heart of our system and connecting that to the democratic process, that is also part of his legacy.
Dr. Richard Samuelson, Associate Professor of Government at Hillsdale College's Washington, D.C. campus, as we talk about the life, career of John Quincy Adams. Dr. Samuelson, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you very much, Scott.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Carol Markowitz on campus as Hillsdale's Pulliam Fellow for the spring 2024 term, and Dr. Richard Samuelson from Hillsdale in D.C. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. The assistant producer of the program is Sam Lair. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Red Bluff Roundup is on April 19th, 20th, and 21st. Get your tickets now. Over $350,000 is up for grabs for 700 competitors. It's the biggest three-day rodeo in the country. Tickets are on sale now, so grab the good seats while you can. It's consistent action with bucking horses, bulls, barrel racing, roping, wild pony riding, and more. Friday is Patriot Day, brought to you by Food Max and Outback Contractors. Gates open at 5, rodeo at 7, and an after party with live music. Saturday brought to you by Sierra Pacific Windows, Sierra Pacific Industries, and Red Bluff Dodge. Gates open at 12, rodeo at 2:30, and an evening concert by country music star Chase Matthews. And Sunday is Haleakala and Dignity Health St. Elizabeth Hospital Tough Enough to Wear Pink Day. Gates open at 12, rodeo at 1:30. Get your tickets now at the Roundup office or online at redbluffroundup.com.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Redding, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.